Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, hallelujah. Today is Wednesday, April 12th. Why am I saying hallelujah? I don't know. It sounded good, so I had to say it.
I liked it.
Good morning, Tori.
Good morning.
You look bright and shiny this morning.
It's because I put on foundation.
No, I don't mean that.
No, come I'm kidding. On. I actually did. I looked.
No, you're just glowing a little happiness, a little chirpiness, whatever you want to say.
And I have my hair up. I actually tried. Some days I do walk in and I feel really bad for Sam because I could be like the thing you think is under your bed. And he's like, oh, good
never,
morning.
I never felt that way. And besides, believe me, I can't expect people to put makeup all the time. And besides, you do what you want.
Yeah. You love me for my brain and my one.
Well, you are easy on the eyes, too,
yes,
Tori.
Thank
you. Know?
You. I mean, definitely, thank you. You know? Right?
Yeah, there you go.
That's exactly right. Thank you very much. Hashtag still got it. Question mark.
Oh man. Oh, hallelujah.
Yes.
We have an awesome guest sitting here, and we're going to be joined by her in just a minute.
Yay.
Yesterday, we were talking about dating and relationships and all that stuff. And we talk a lot about that here because people love to talk about it, and we do too.
Oh, it's universal.
Because it's the human condition.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, they're saying if you want to be happy and successful, try compassion. And what they're saying by compassion is experiencing feelings of loving kindness toward another person's affliction.
Guess what Buddhism's the number one word in Buddhism is?
Oh, tell me.
Compassion.
Wow.
And the idea of compassion and empathy is revolutionary, but it's been there the whole time.
Right.
Now, here's the other thing that's interesting. When you go through something bad, instead of thinking, like, let's say you get let's say you're on a job interview and you get a speeding ticket and you're late and you're like, damn it. Mm. And you're so mad and you have nothing good to hold on to. That's the perfect time to have empathy for everyone in the world that moment that's late to something really important.
Right, right.
And instead of being mad, you show empathy to all those that are going through it. And it helps the pain in yourself, too.
Right.
Now, also, compassion to yourself is important because we forget that a lot.
Right.
But people don't remember. Self-compassion is a very... If your compassion practice does not include yourself, it is incomplete.
That's true. Absolutely. And they are saying that the word compassion is often confused with empathy. And they're saying the differences are empathy is feeling with someone. Mm. So it's like if you think about it, I think compassion is God, I feel bad for you. And I think empathy is like I know how you feel.
Yeah, so that's why I say when you get a speeding ticket, you have empathy for everyone else that moment that's going through it just like you.
Right, right.
I know exactly how you feel. Or let's say you're really sick and you can't afford those hospital bills.
Right.
A million people around the world are also doing that right now. So that's when you get to show empathy and feel empathy for the first time.
Right.
Like, really feel it.
That's awesome. Yeah. So, try compassion, folks. I've been practicing it myself, actually. And good results.
In Sanskrit, the name is Maitri. M-A-I-T-R-I. And I always was like, oh, I should name my first kid Maitri.
Oh.
And then I'm like, no, he would just get teased mercilessly in a terrible world.
Yeah, don't do that to
Yeah,
kid.
Boo. So I was like, all right, we'll go with like William or something. I don't know. Something different.
Yeah.
But yeah, Maitri and the idea of self-compassion. So if you do something wrong, instead of immediately being like, you suck, you suck, you suck, the idea of like being a mother or father to yourself and being very kind, like a mother bird to a baby bird, is very revolutionary.
Yeah,
No one does that here.
Yeah.
But in the Eastern culture, that's much more likely. But here we're like, you stupid jerk! And that's not the best way to go about it. Maybe.
I just think you're going to end up a Buddhist one day.
I hope, but I don't think I ever will be. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, but you're not going to be like heavy duty into it, right?
No, if I were a monk, if I want to follow Pema and she's the monk, she does shave her head. And I'm like, well,
I'll pass
that. Ooh, I
pass
love that. My beauty products.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I know.
But I do think it's very helpful in the long run for your long-term health. For that's when, you keep reading these things and it's like they keep saying mindfulness, compassion. These are all been there for thousands thousands of years.
Right.
But it's because people are kind of finding this so relevant today in these right. stressful days.
And I think it also requires sort of like being aware and connecting with people out oh. there, which we don't do a
no.
lot.
No, you know? Especially in this world. You're absolutely right. Yeah. Right. Mindfulness is very hard when you have a cell phone to go look at dog pictures. That's right. very difficult.
Yeah. And it pisses me off when people, when they drive, they do this. And they do crazy shit.
Dude.
You know,
someone was playing Candy Crush and driving, and I'm like, dude.
Yeah, you know.
Or like FaceTiming.
They don't see the lights change. They, you know.
It's worse than, I mean, it's not worse. They say it's just like drunk driving.
Yeah, right?
But it's so distracting.
It's distracting yeah. as hell, you know. It's not the same. I don't know why for other people, it's not the same as it is for me. For me, I have a Bluetooth in the car, so I don't have to hold the phone, right? And I think talking on the phone is like talking to someone next to you in your seat next to you. Why does it have to be any different? So it doesn't have to be distracting, but people insist on holding the phone in their hand and then texting.
Right. And the other thing, texting is really bad. And texting then the other is also bad is you can't, if you don't know California, you can't have it to your ear, right?
Right, right.
Because cops come. So what do people do? They do it lower and right. then like look down.
The speaker, yeah.
So it's way worse.
I know. People are crazy. And all it takes is a split second for you to hit somebody and
change your life,
and a text can grab your attention for maybe a couple seconds.
It could kill you, man.
You know,
I signed the Oprah pledge. Don't yeah. text and drive.
Yeah, I don't. I never do.
Yeah, well,
I don't
think
even
that's
read
great.
Text. You
that's
know,
that's great.
That's why I got the iWatch, because then if I get a text, I can just look at my watch and see who's texting. I don't really read it.
Exactly. Or
but
respond.
At least I don't have that curiosity
sure,
then.
Yeah.
I got to find out who oh, that
dude,
is, you know?
Know? Yeah. Well, so, I think yeah. that's great. And I think with really technology, self-driving cars, things like this are going to be eliminated because why? What we always say, we're turning into robots.
Yeah, that's right. And we're moving in that direction.
I tell you, that's our slogan.
Yeah,
Sam
right.
and Tori,
robots.
We're turning into robots.
So a couple more things. First of all, Taiwan bans eating dog and cat meat. So congratulations to them. Finally joining the 21st century.
Normalcy of
the world.
Yeah, right? Jesus.
But yeah, they're saying so now, I guess.
You know
you
why
can,
that is?
You can get that's fined
a,
there.
It's a tourist thing. People will not come there if you do that.
Right, right. Yeah, it's terrible because people in the West don't eat pets.
No.
You know? So the hell with that one. Also, and we probably want to touch, right before we get to our guest, we probably want to touch on, you probably want to touch on Sean Spicer.
Oh, God, I watched it live, Sam.
Really?
I watched it live
and
after the show.
It.
I couldn't. And I was, I tweeted it before anyone else started talking about Holocaust centers. And people were like, what are you talking about? And then it went.
Wow.
So, yeah, if you don't know what he said, and it was, I feel so bad because this guy just doesn't think before he speaks. And that's the
he shouldn't be in that position.
That's the one
right?
thing you need to be
qualified.
In that job. Yeah, he is just, this was a bad
he needs
one.
A thick skin,
I watch him every day,
have.
And
yeah.
he just, this was bad. And what's funny is if you watch the two women who are asking a question, the girl and April Ryan behind the reporter, their reactions tell you everything.
Really?
So he said something like, Hitler doesn't even use chemical weapons, which
right.
actually came from a Fox Business tweet the night before, just so you know.
Really?
And so that started getting traction during the press conference. So, of course, someone addressed and said, you're going on Twitter and people are going crazy saying you said Hitler didn't use chemical weapons.
He didn't sink to it. That's
yeah, he didn't
said.
Sink to that level.
Right.
Even Hitler didn't sink to that
right.
level. By the
that's
way, never use
saying.
Hitler in like a metaphor.
Right.
Just stay away
right.
from that.
You don't use Hitler for
ever,
anything.
Anything. So he jumped into that pool and then he said, okay, you're right. Okay, I meant he doesn't hurt his own people.
Mm.
And then he said something like, I understand what you're saying. Yes, I want to be clear. I do understand when he took those people and took them into the Holocaust centers. And then he did it very quickly.
The Holocaust centers?
So he moved on. He went like this to the mama. He couldn't think the word. And what he said was the Holocaust centers. Thanks for clearing that up. And if you looked around, you could see two women go look around and say, what? And I go, did he just call concentration camps Holocaust centers?
Center.
And then it just went viral.
Yeah.
So he's apologized twice.
Yeah.
Once wasn't good enough. And then he apologized again.
Right. Then he says, I let the president down.
And Nancy Pelosi and the Jewish Federal, you know, they're asking for, the Jewish Council's asking for his resignation.
Her resignation, right. Yeah.
I mean, that's weird because no one calls it a Holocaust center. It's not like I've ever heard of that.
I know. When I heard Holocaust, somebody wrote on Facebook, what's Holocaust center?
Yeah.
And I thought, Maybe it's those museums.
That's what people thought. Yeah. But that's not even what you call that. It's a memorial like, so to us, you know, it's like, does he just not know the word, or like, it just is so, and then to deny that Hitler used gas, like, it's so bizarre too.
And to compare it, yeah, to bring him up anyway, it's like as though he wasn't the ultimate evil. That's what he was trying to
say.
I
know. I said it was as smooth as a Pop Rocks going up a porcupine's asshole. That's what I said on Twitter.
How the hell did you come up with
that? Because I was thinking, what's the least smooth thing in the world? And I thought of Pop Rocks and porcupines.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because it was just a minefield.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. And, you know, United again. We talked about United. Uh-huh. They've come out and apologized again. They've lost $1 billion
wow.
in business.
In value.
In the stock, but also there's a boycott United.
Oh, really?
So they're losing millions and millions on this. Wow. So, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, they didn't handle this very well, you know.
They said no one should be treated like that. And they just changed their policy today. Law enforcement will no longer be called in, and they'll no longer be doing random pull-offs. So, I mean, this changed everything.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's about time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, okay. Well, anyway, so this is it. There's a lot to talk about, so we'll continue talking with our guests, and maybe we'll talk some more about the stuff that's happening in the world.
Yes,
but we're more concerned with Kay Brandt. Woo! Welcome to the show, Kay.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. I've known Kay, you've been at the station a few times, so mm-hmm. we've known each other for a while, but I don't know you well, so this is a great opportunity for you to finally come on the show, and you get to meet Tori, and we get to know a little bit about you.
Yeah.
So, and all I know is that about you is you've been hovering around sex. That's all I know.
Hovering. She sounds like a hummingbird.
I don't know about hovering. I'd say dictating.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is that no, but you've been around shows that are more based on sex, wouldn't you say?
I wouldn't say around. I'm the creator of. When you're around,
no, on the radio shows I'm talking about.
What are you talking about?
You've been guests on radio shows.
Oh, I'm here?
Right.
On Melissa
right.
Hill's show twice and then Mofos. Yeah.
Okay. So go on. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, hovering.
So, not hovering over sex. You're part of it. Sex is a big part of you, of your life. No?
Well, okay. So let's go back.
Okay.
Sex is a big part of everybody's life. Mm-hmm. So to even
not
put
everybody.
That off on
some
me.
People don't,
no, that's
some people
not true.
Don't like sex at
even,
all.
Even really, even those who've sworn themselves to religion and uh-huh. and are involved in celibacy, we know that for the most part, it's not true.
Right.
And secondly, they've still made a conscious choice to deny themselves sexual life.
Right.
So it is still a part
big
of them.
Part
it's a
of
part
their
that
life.
They're aware of, or else they would never have had to make a choice in the first place. It wouldn't have been a big deal. I
right.
mean,
but if you don't put any blocks up or anything, then sex is natural and we all love it.
Yeah, and we are all suffering from a certain amount of brainwashing that tells us that it's bad and that we shouldn't.
Right.
And that it's negative and it must be secreted and quieted. And when I started making directing films in the adult industry, those were my own issues that I had to get over because I was raised Catholic.
I was going
to
say, were you raised Catholic?
Yeah. And in fact, my high school was right down the street, and it's now a school for the Japanese that actually went bankrupt the year that I graduated because the nuns ran it into the ground.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Oh.
Just because you're a nun does not mean that you have any business sense whatsoever. The tuition was through the roof, and we had no extracurricular activities.
So where's the money going?
Well, good question.
Yes.
Wow.
Some of those ladies were out partying is what they were doing in the 80s. It closed, I won't say the year, but I did graduate in the late 80s, and now it's a school for Japanese right on Laurel Canyon.
That's
right.
Wow.
So you grew up here in the valley?
I did.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I mean, because we don't meet that many people growing up here. Many people move here from mm-hmm. the East Coast or whatever. So what was it like growing up in Southern California for you?
Well.
I mean, no, because it's you know, it's different, right? I mean, tell me a little bit about your childhood. What was your childhood like? Do you have any siblings?
No. Well, no. I do. I have half siblings. I have a lot of half siblings. I had a wandering father.
Oh.
Really?
Yes.
But you were an only child early on.
I was an only child, yeah.
Okay.
And actually, it's through Facebook that my siblings and all are really connected, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Facebook has connected a lot of
families.
It's
okay. It's, you know, sometimes it's better just left alone because then you meet them and you're like, so
ooh.
What? You know?
Ooh.
Was that worth
Wait,
it?
What? Her?
Yeah. Now I have her spying on my timeline. I want to block some of my family members, you know. I just can't believe, like, I don't even know, you know. There's only a couple of people that I allow on my K Facebook that are family members. And, and that's only because they're super cool and they totally get it. But otherwise, no, you know, there's no way.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know. So now I was wondering, because, you see, I was I grew up in Las Vegas, really, when I moved here from, and I would come and visit L.A. It was such a different place back in the, like, in the 80s, you know? And, I mean, you're not as old as I am, so you may not remember some of these things.
Close.
But
no.
I don't know. No. But you don't look it, that's for sure, Kate. But, and plus, I'm probably older than you think I am.
Well, then you don't look it.
Yay. So unicorns and rainbows.
Botox.
Yes, mama.
Night creams.
So many night creams. I'm, like, cutting out Cosmo as she's coming in. I'm like, I need this. I need that.
Yeah. Yep. So I remember visiting L.A. was very different then. I mean, the traffic wasn't as bad as it is now. And, you know,
you weren't here in the Olympics in the 80s.
I was.
Oh, yeah. I was a teenager
in the Olympics. In the Olympics, it was actually empty because everybody left town. Don't you remember that?
Because I hung out with a lot of actors. I was a teen actor. And so all of my friends were working actors. I was an auditioning actor.
But welcome to my world.
Well, I know I did a few things here and there, but most of my friends had books, were on series, and they were regulars. They were having starring roles in movies as teenagers. None of them made the transition. So I mean, I was involved in an acting class that was very it was in Hollywood, and it was one of those things that you could only really find in the 80s. Really, because it was run by a B-movie star whose biggest fame was the fact that his daughter was Soleil Moon Frye, who played Punky Brewster.
And I hosted a show with her for a year.
Okay. So Virgin Frye.
I know Soleil.
Yeah, was her dad. And he had this crazy acting class that I used to go to 3 times a week. And why my mother let me attend this at 15 and 16 years old, I have no idea.
She probably wanted you to be a star
But she, I don't know. I mean, things were just so much, they were very different in the 80s. It was not, we had lived by a different set of rules.
It's true.
Right. That's
it's
why
true.
I'm asking.
So
what
you're asking about
like?
Growing up here. I mean, you know, I went to a private all-girls Catholic high school right down the street, right here in the middle of the San Fernando Valley.
So
right?
That was a high school. That wasn't like middle school or elementary.
That was
You're talking about high school.
Our Lady of Corvallis High School. And they closed in 1987.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what's it like in like an all-girls school? I mean, so they don't
bad.
Talk about
yeah.
bad.
We
right?
were bad.
I mean,
we
they
bad.
Don't talk, but they don't talk about like real life, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't need to because we knew.
Right.
In the 80s, we knew. I mean, most of the girls that I was in school with had very famous parents, and that's why they were there and not in public school. Mm. And were dating very famous people at 15 and 16 years old. You wouldn't find that now at Notre Dame right here across the street where that used to be an all boys school when I was going to Our Lady of Corvallis. Oh. And when that school closed, that became a school that allowed girls in so that they could take the overflow.
Uh-huh.
Same thing with Harvard High School, which is a private school, was all boys, and now it's co-ed.
Oh, wow.
But
now we know a little bit of history about my neighborhood.
My first day of ninth grade at Our Lady of Corvallis, you got kidnapped by the seniors. They took me to Notre Dame High School right here across the street at 4 a.m. and made me walk in my pajamas.
What?
At 4 in the morning with like antennas on my head and dressed with like a sign that said I'm a freshman and all. It was hazing.
Wow. That was hazing.
Yeah, it was.
Which I would call bullying, you know?
But my parents completely consented to it. I was like, thank you, mom and dad.
Thanks a lot, mom.
Thank you very much for that. Yeah, that was fabulous.
So that's cool. So so you grew up in, you went to high school here. What happened after high school? What did you do then?
Oh, I just sat around and made people miserable.
Really? I mean, did you at that point think, what do I want to do with
my
life?
The curse of being an actor is that was part of it. My acting school was in Hollywood, so that was probably the whole thing about the Olympics, because the traffic was unreal. I mean, it's always bad in Hollywood. Traffic is, I mean, still, like, I can't, like, I start to hyperventilate when I have to drive through Hollywood because I can't believe it's never gotten better. In fact, now it's even worse because there's so much more construction.
I was
going to
say construction and the sewers and all that. I'm like, just move.
Yeah, but this is like, I mean, it rivals New York City in a much smaller, stranger way. But it's like it's so bad, and it was so bad then. But anyway, that regardless, I was acting a lot. I was getting a lot of auditions, and that moment when you can transition seamlessly from high school to college, I thought maybe I need to put it off for a year. And it was that year that really kind of fucked me.
It did what? Fucked things
up. Yeah, it sort of fucked things up because I got a job working for a production company, and I started off as an intern, and that was in Hollywood too. And I ended up leaving home and moving into an apartment in Hollywood with three other girls, and that was a big mistake. And then
really?
Yeah, at 18, that's a big mistake. I didn't have enough responsibility under my belt to be able to understand what I was getting into.
18 is still young. Yeah,
well, you know, that first of the month comes around awfully fast.
That rent right? money.
Yeah, especially then when minimum wage was like $4 an hour.
They give you a pat on the back and send you on your way for your minimum wage.
So even with three roommates, it was hard to...
Oh, it was $1,000 a month, and that was 1988.
Wow, that's still expensive.
So I remember... Yeah, but that was like top dollar then.
Yeah, and it was for four people. You know, it's not just a one bedroom.
Well,
but anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, we keep getting stuck on the 80s all the time.
Just because that was then, you know. Yeah. It was just things look a lot cleaner in the valley than they did back then, and so many buildings have had facelifts that were so run down.
So many people too.
Yeah. And there's so many supermarket chains that have come and gone and were taken over by other things.
I remember like Safeway, remember, and Lucky's and yeah, they used to have all those here.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, but you know, as far as like, you know, the girls and that how we were in high school, it was just, we were just naughty. I mean, I remember having, I was good friends with this, I won't name names, but she was dating Nikki Sixx.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, and she was how old?
16.
Jesus. Oh, my God.
And he would come to, it was a different time.
I got
to
tell you, so I went to a very progressive, liberal, all co-ed, like...
Here?
No, in Washington, D.C. But I always, and right across, we had NCS right across National Cathedral School. The coolest girls I like to party with, I got to be super honest, the Catholic girls, these girls, they came in their dang skirts that were so freaking cute.
Oh, yeah.
And then they would toss a couple of shots and then they're good to go. Yeah. I loved it. They knew what they were doing.
We did. Yeah. We did a lot of really rebellious
things.
Because
you rebelled. Yeah, you rebelled so much. Yeah.
Yeah. And we didn't care at all. And we had no law over us because most of our parents were really successful people that were very, very busy in their careers. My parents are very successful people. They just weren't around. You know, and being a kid in the 70s, I was a latchkey kid. So I was used to being alone. I was used to being on
my
own.
The perfect storm.
Right.
Yeah.
I love it.
Right. And and that's, you know, now I can't even imagine letting kids do it. Just no way. You know, although, you know, kids today, you see them like they don't look up from their phones. It's their whole world is on their phones. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be some sort of shift that happens as they get older when they realize they can't live like that.
I hope so.
Or they can't lift their neck.
Well, that's
maybe physically they can't look up.
That has been an issue for a while. Scientists are already studying the fact that the neck of current generation is going to be it's actually going to change the skeleton.
Yeah. Wow, like evolution.
Yeah, because you know how you all stood up from the apes, and then now it's going to go back to this thing. We're all turning into robots.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's if you stay alive and don't look at your phone while you're driving, for crying out loud.
The other thing I learned is when my mom was talking to a chiropractor, or not a chiropractor, a surgeon. He said we're all turning our thumbs in when we walk. So you want to practice with your thumbs out so that you're not like turning your wrists in. I mean, we're turning into crazy people.
Yeah, right?
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Exactly. Yeah,
I think we're thinking too much.
Yeah.
That's always a problem.
Yeah.
That's always a problem. So how did you go from Catholic school? You were in high school. You're acting. What did the production company then lead to?
The production company I started working for in 87, I think. I actually started working there when I was still in school part-time after school, just doing an internship and then a couple days a week, and it turned into a full-time thing after I graduated. They had done a movie that was pretty successful back in the 80s called The Student Body, which was a horror film.
Uh-huh.
And And the way that the owner of the company, he was a genius actually at the time, but it wouldn't work anymore. The way that he was funding his independent, his little independent movies was he was the man who created the first 976 line.
Okay. So those are like where they would charge you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they would charge you phone for calling for. Yeah,
and you'd be like, "Hello,"
and things like that.
I love the voices.
Yeah, and they weren't always adult.
Right.
They had
right.
the party lines, so you could just call and chat with people.
Oh,
that
yeah,
was
like
stupid.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Linda. I'm also at a party, and she's like getting ready for her kids' graduation. Yeah.
But I guess people always needed that connection. Now we have it with Facebook and
he
everything.
He had a thing called 976 Date, and he actually like was the person who not copyrighted, but he made that his deal. Like he owned that thing, so everybody else tried to compete to come up with all four-letter words after that. But they were recorded lines, and you had to have a credit card, and you had to pay to listen to a recorded message.
You mean the woman wasn't even there?
No, they were recorded messages with a code that said, "Send me a message here," because we didn't have cell phones. There was no other, so they called a recording, and they could pick from a number of women, and those women were real. I had to interview. Part of my job actually ended up being interviewing these ladies, being assisting in the recordings of their messages, which were done in the production company at the facility, and then putting them all. And you want to see how high tech this was? There was a bookshelf of answering machines. Old 80s answering machines where you actually had to press stop, pause, play, rewind, fast forward, delete, a stack of them, and they would go off all day long because the callers would not, you wouldn't hear phones ring. They would go directly to these answer machines and they'd be clicking, 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 clicking all day long, playing all day long. And the most popular one was the one for mistresses to look for a BDSM, you know, a bondage.
Like a dominatrix?
A DS. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. Now, that's interesting, you know, how things develop. And
and so I started writing scripts for these women that would come in for the Dateline to say, I'm so-and-so, because after a while, they didn't have enough original content, enough original messages to go out, so we had to hire actresses, voice actresses to come in, and then it just really became a fake thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was fake all the way around.
Yeah.
And then all the letters that the men would send to these women, me and one of my girlfriends that I was getting paid part-time, I recruited her. We would write back. We would answer back these letters. So we were writing letters. So I was writing scripts and writing letters. And the owner of the company always had interest in actually making some of the scripts that I'd written for feature films. And it was right about that time. It was just bad timing, really, that everything fell apart at this company because the owner of the company was having an affair. And the woman who ran the president of the company was his living girlfriend.
Wow.
And the owner of the company had me supersede these letters that would come from his girlfriend and store them away. And one day, his girlfriend, the president of the company, found them.
Oh, wow.
And I got caught in the middle of the mess.
Wow.
of the thunderstorm. Yeah.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave.
It was bad. It was really bad. And she had the power because he gave her so much authority at that company. She really, he couldn't run it without her because he was always traveling around to film festivals and this and that, whatever. Or he was on location.
She was business. She was the business.
She was keeping the everyday Monday through Friday business going, right? And the LA Datelines and all that stuff. And he completely screwed her over on that one. And when she found out, it was like hell hath no fury. She brought that hammer down, and that was it. We were all unemployed. The company would close within a couple weeks after that. And yeah, it was
good
bad.
For her.
Yeah.
Wow, awesome. Tori likes the empowerment of women, so there you go.
Everyone likes the empowerment.
You know, it's not just the empowerment of women. It's just that...
that guy was a dick.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about affairs is that there's obviously something that people, that we're all lacking. Again, here's like where a segue into adult content and porn is relevant because it's meant to fill a void. It's meant for entertainment purposes, and yet there is still so much bad behavior. You know, when you get into a relationship with somebody, essentially you've made a commitment to be honest, and that's the thing. It's like, if you're no longer interested in being honest to what you promised, then be honest for something else. Come out and say you're just not interested.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what I say is, if you're not interested anymore, then end what you have first,
right,
and then get into something else. It's not fair. It doesn't make sense to start another relationship while you're already in a relationship.
I think that's the, you know, we're smart enough
betrayal.
To put, we're smart enough to put people on the moon. You know, we're smart enough to think about flying rockets to Mars, and yet we're not smart enough to go, hey, you know, I made a commitment into a monogamous relationship. What are all these feelings I'm having for somebody else? What do they mean? Do they mean you have to act on them? Absolutely not. Does it mean that it's okay to feel them? Yes. Because we are human beings, we feel attraction towards people that we cannot rationally wrap our brains around. So we kind of walk around going, oh, why do I feel? Why am I attracted? Why do I? Because you're a human being.
Right.
Because we're creatures.
That's very true. And then what we were talking about in the beginning is like the Western Hemisphere, we always have so much guilt. And it's like in other hemispheres, it's just not in other places and other cultures, there isn't the guilt on that. That's just normal. You know what I mean? So we always add stuff and layers on top of ourselves.
Yeah. Right. Or like how religion teaches you all you have to do is pray and everything's going to be fine. But, you know, praying does very little.
In terms of actual action. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. That's why I went, you know, I love Judaism and I love it. But Buddhism is actual very practical for me, which is why I'm studying. Because like, what do I do when I'm freaking out? I can't just pray it away. Like I have to, or you can, but you kind of also have to have breathing techniques.
Well,
you know?
Just remember that so far science has not found heaven and they have not found hell. So until we can send a rocket that passes through some sort of cloud layer out there where there's all of your dead relatives and pets.
But it's not supposed to be a physical place. So you will probably never see that before we die.
Okay.
But yeah, exactly. We're getting too spiritual now. We want to talk about sex. Yeah. Kay Brandt is joining us this morning. You've written several books and we'll get to them and stuff.
Wow.
21 friggin' books. Wow. We'll get to that. But I do want to know, so when you started doing this, what was it? Did you start discovering your sexual side, or had you already discovered that early on? At what age did you discover your sexuality?
Well, there's two different things going on here. Sexuality is something that you come to mentally. But physically, I think all children, you know, once they find their genitalia,
they do it. That's true.
Yeah.
That's
and true. It happens, you know, it's all different, you know, all different ages and all different times. But so it's the fact that we separate our sexuality from who we are as people that really kind of like starts the screwed up process of trying to find ourselves and being afraid to talk about sexuality is why it's such a big business now with therapists and coaches and doctors. You know, I know a million doctors, female doctors now. I don't know if they're really doctors, but they're practitioners of sex and sexuality, sex coaches, all of that. It's a gigantic business now because we are all completely broken people who have no idea how to deal with our sexuality. And
that's true.
These were some very big issues that I had to face head on when I made the conscious choice to not just write and direct adult films but to then go public.
Yeah. How did you, was it hard telling your parents? Like, this is like the big thing.
No, my parents still don't know.
Wow.
Shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't turn the radio on, mom or dad. No, I'm kidding.
The thing is, is that, my mom is not she's very politically involved. She's very aware of what's going on socially, but is she someone who has anything to do with social media? No. Nothing.
Wow.
Zero. Zero, zero, zero.
Wow.
And
what does she think you're doing? Just doing films?
I've told her straight away. And, you know, just like yesterday, she's sending me a slew of emails saying, I have this great story of something I experienced when I was younger and I copyrighted it 20 years ago. Maybe you want to brush it off. I'm like, maybe, but not this year. Because I have a whole slate of books that I owe my publisher this year and I have to work on. Plus, I have two movies coming up in March and May and in June and hopefully more after that. So it's, you know, they don't know. Now, my stepdad, I've put it in his face. I've told him straight out, do you want to know or do you not want to know?
And he said...
And he said, nope.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
nope.
Wow.
Mm. Now, I found dime novels under his bed when I was a teenager.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but you know, I mean, look, let me tell you what when someone realized they were sexual, not the kids discovered the genitalia, but let's say some people, like, I don't know, the upbringing or whatever.
Yeah.
They don't discover themselves until they're teenagers. They start puberty and all that stuff.
Well, they discover their hormones and their urges when they're teenagers. They haven't discovered themselves.
Right, right. But, okay, but I mean, I was doing this when I was like friggin' 4 or 5 years old. I was playing doctor.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so it's like, to me, that's why it seems like sex has always been important to me. I mean, I would go into the bookstore and shoplift like erotic novels and shit like that. Newsstands.
You're still shoplifting now.
Yeah, because I mean, how you
stealing off of Amazon? But
But how as a kid are you going to get an erotic novel? That's what I'm saying. I was like 12 years old.
Yeah, I was probably 12 when I found the first dime novel underneath my stepfather's bed.
Right, you know, so.
And I read it. Like,
yeah.
And I was like, holy shit.
I remember the joy of sex when I saw it in my parents. I'm like, these are hairy people.
My parents
people.
Had that too.
Hairy, hairy.
Oh,
night.
Man, I read that thing front to back.
I definitely was interested in reading
Studied those pictures.
I sure did. But they were so hairy. The guy would, so much
which
hair.
Ones,
they still are.
Which
Look at Ron Jeremy.
The joy of sex from the 70s.
Oh,
was
yeah.
But man, that was
I know. Remember the picture with Burt Reynolds? How hairy he was.
Oh, Lord.
Ron Jeremy.
Yeah. Okay, but Ron Jeremy is not an example of an attractive man. He's been in movies, but okay. I mean, I've met him several times, believe me. He's a god to some people, but not to me.
He's gotten less attractive as he's gotten older, but that's okay. It happens.
I don't think he was ever attractive, do you?
No, I think there was probably a moment. There was probably a moment, you know. Yeah. I mean, some of the big features he did, they did their best to dress him up.
Yeah. I mean, the way they made movies really in the 70s and 80s is different from the way they make them today,
right? Well, because they were making movies on film.
Right. But they were also like...
with budgets.
And they were just starting out, so there was a lot of creativity. I think today, it's like all porn is the same, wouldn't you say? I mean, what's different?
No, I wouldn't. Okay, right? But that's a choice.
Because you have the same girls like in different movies and stuff like that.
That happens, though.
It turns out being the same thing.
No, well, it can be. And for many, many fans that I've been in contact with over the 8 years that I've been in the adult industry, they like that. It's comforting.
It's to see the same thing.
And they know what to expect. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why that happens a lot is because there are a lot of girls in the industry. There are a lot of men in the industry, a lot of boys, ladies and men, female and male. But there are only a handful of female performers that are really, really know how to put on a great show during the sex scenes and also can act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what does that mean to put on a great show in a sex scene?
When you watch sex with a girl who's not that interested in it or doesn't have a lot of technique or is just kind of like going through the motions.
Phoning it in.
Yeah. And it happens. Those are girls that get hired less. Mm. They're usually the ones that you pick if you have a shoot coming up and you have nobody else to pick.
I feel like they're the ones who are like, do me. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's less of those, but a lot of it has to do with just age and experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard for me to understand that these girls, you know, a lot of these girls get into the industry at 18 and they're already doing anal and they're doing triple penetration and all that.
God.
And I think, you know, when I was 18... was wondering if my pack-a-day cigarette habit was like maybe getting a little too dangerous and that when I got to a pack and a half, maybe I should quit. You know, like that kind of thing. Like that's what was going through my head was, how am I gonna
studying for like AP history. Yeah, yeah. Like I was so lame. Yeah. I was so lame.
Yeah. How am I going to sneak this pack of cigarettes in my Catholic school skirt and get into class? And then where am I going to smoke on my break?
Wow.
Not how many dicks am I going to fit in my asshole today?
Wow.
Yeah. So you got into a whole industry, and what was that like? I mean, did you make a conscious decision to get into the adult industry?
Completely. I had to.
Yeah.
Because you can only walk the tightrope for so long before you have to commit. And that is with any job. Even if you're working at Starbucks, you can say, well, I'm just going to do this for a couple of weeks. And then you realize that you need the money and you need that steady paycheck. Mm-hmm. And the company's not bad to work for. So you might as well stay. Yeah, exactly. And then suddenly it becomes a thing. Like I know I'm very good friends with a couple of actors who I knew as a teenager in that acting class I was talking about earlier, and they actually had big dreams of becoming serious feature actors,
like
and they got a part on a soap, and what they thought was going to be a temporary thing.
That's now they're there 50, 60, they're
we're
forever.
Talking, 20 years later, they're still on the soap, and they've made peace with it, but they had to consciously make peace with that this is probably as far as their career is going to go, and so they're never going to get that Academy Award, and they're never going to do this, they're never going to do that, but they have a steady job that pays bank.
Yeah, why wouldn't
a bank? You know, it's a union gig, so you're fully supported, his job is protected, and he's got a huge fan base. He can do whatever the fuck he wants, you know. That's like his life is good, but as an actor the ego talks first,
right?
Usually.
Do you ever you've had a lot of time to think about these things. Have you found like a common denominator among porn performers that I wouldn't say drives them to do porn, but that gives them the ability to say, you know, I'm going to do this.
They're not cut from the same mold as somebody who could be an accountant. Although a lot of people who are in porn and been very successful in porn did have jobs like bank managers and company owners and this, that, you know, like they actually had a life beforehand. They actually went, got degrees and went to college and did the whole thing.
Right.
But they're highly sexual creatures who don't have an issue about an entire room of people watching them. And now with social media, which has drastically changed the adult industry, because you don't even need, I mean, I know there's plenty of guys who just create these accounts on Twitter so they can watch these 2-second clips and these, you know, 30-second GIFs that are taken from a film set with performers actually in the act of sex or about to approach sex or aftermath of sex. And that's all they need.
Right.
That's all they need.
And then they picture that.
Yeah, well, they don't need that. They've been stimulated. You know, like some of these clips that are on Twitter are, it's like, why would you even need to buy the movie after you watch these? Because they give you everything you need. If you're just looking to get off,
right,
and you can do it very quickly, which so many men can,
right,
you know, that you...
That's true.
Yeah, but you don't need
We can talk about painful porn in a little bit, and we don't have that much time, but no, but but that's a problem for the industry, right? I mean, what do you do in order to...
I don't think it's really a problem. I think the industry was really badly damaged by piracy. It was really badly damaged by the fact that majority of the big company owners, we're talking Vivid, Digital Playground, there's a couple others, I won't get into any more names, did not prepare themselves for the digital age, were slow to adapt to VOD and streaming.
Video on demand?
Yeah.
Okay.
And were not able to combat the ways of pirators and file sharing and stealing. I remember at Girlfriends Films, this was back in 2009, that was the first company I worked for in the industry, they would have trucks that were filled with their DVDs to shipment somewhere, and the movies were pirated before the trucks
before it even reached
their
destination.
Wow.
So and you know, I remember at Digital Playground, they had a staff of big lawyers, MindGeek, which was formerly Manwin. That's another story, I won't get into it, but they have some big ass lawyers that work for them, and even they can't stop it. What we do is that, you know, fans used to send me links of my movies years ago saying this is on this site, Pirate Bay, whatever, and I would just take the link and then forward it off to the attorneys, and then the attorneys would send a cease and desist.
Yeah, I would say cease and desist.
But that doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean nothing.
It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, anything, and you can't
just
do
a letter.
Shit about it.
Yeah.
You know, especially if they're in another state or something. But, you've been through a lot, and you really know your stuff, and we're quickly running out of time, so you'll definitely have to come back.
We'll
have to talk about a lot of more stuff. I like to pick your brain.
Okay.
I like smart people.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk a little bit about your books. Let's try and promote some of what you do. So so you've been in the adult industry now for how long?
9 years writing and directing.
9 years. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty recent. I mean, if you think
about it. It's
very
recent, and it's been a very, very rocky road.
So what did you do before that? Like right before
I was in mainstream. I was a writer-director. I was also a producer in mainstream. And that's a tough road. Being an independent producer in a field that has about, 50,000 other producers.
I was going to say a billion.
And so many of these producers, like so many of the writers, you know, like I get people, you know, sending me messages all the time saying, you know, give me advice about, I want to write a screenplay. And what do I do now? And I'm like, good luck.
Yeah.
Because you have no idea how hard it is. It is like a lightning bolt strike if you actually get a script made into a film.
Yeah.
It's a little bit not quite as uncommon to get a script option, which means you've given the temporary rights to a company for a certain amount of pay or no pay, if that's what your contract says. It's a free option. I was working very closely with an attorney, and I won't say his name, but he was a big time entertainment attorney in the 70s and 80s and the 90s. And he and I had a little business together, and we were actively producing projects. At one time, we had some major, major, major projects with major, major, major companies. And we were basically counting the money. We were buying our vacation homes together in the Caribbean. We had these grand plans because there was nothing that said that at least one of these movies would get made. And if at least one of those movies got made, the minimum budget was $5 million. We both would have walked away with six figures on the deal. And And not one of those movies happened.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So not people don't realize that, huh? They come to this town thinking, I'm going to make it big, but...
Some do, but those are very few, right?
So, and I got to be one of honest. I was one of those people.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'll never be there past 30. I'll already be like making my money. Man, yes. It is just, it's so, you have to want it so bad.
And work your ass off. And even then, I remember as a producer going into CAA, the Creative Artists Agency, and having these meetings, and I would call it the Great Mausoleum. They're not at this facility anymore in Beverly Hills that they were back then in the 90s, but they, and in the early 2000s, but they had these giant travertine walls and they were like these huge rectangles, you know, and I thought, these are the crypts.
Yep.
So when the agents die, they just take them from their office and dump them in there and shove the travertine doors closed, and nobody will ever know that that agent died, because there were so many agents.
Yeah.
They've gone through huge cutbacks and downsizing, and that's good, because I remember doing business there and going floors of agents.
I got to tell you, when I went to CAA, I walked in, I go, they really need some more granite and marble here.
Yeah.
Because it was just filled.
That's what I'm saying.
It was ridiculous.
That's what I'm saying.
They did not take me on. They didn't think the joke was funny.
And you had to have an assistant come get you from the waiting room. And then you walked a very long way to the office. And then you had to sit down and you had to explain your situation. And when you realize that there's a stack of other projects on that agent's desk, and all of these are scripts from CAA represented writers. And if you're not represented by CAA, William Morris, any of the big ICM, any of the big agencies, you can just forget it. Mm. Your chances are reduced
very
drastically.
Small.
And then you're kind of stuck in the indie world of trying to figure out how to raise money. And I was doing that too.
Yeah.
And that's another one. Working with investors is a tricky situation. Many investors never actually get to the point where they want to write the check.
Right.
They like to have a lot of meetings. They like to have a lot of conversations.
Dinners,
yeah. Drinks, cocktails.
Drinks.
Yeah, the whole thing. Yeah. And I went through it. And after about a decade, I was like, I can't. And then I went through a four-year dry period where all the projects I had were all turned around. They were all sent into turnaround. Not one of them actually made it to the next level where the chances of getting that green light into production are there. You know, then people also don't understand how many levels you have to get a script
producer
to go
studio
through.
Yeah. Network. Yep.
It is massive. It's a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the thing about adult, is that I was able to do like this instant manifestation of my work, because I went in, I would film it, and a month later it's out.
That's awesome.
You know, and you could develop an actual resume that way.
Yeah.
And see tangible results of your work.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. So in the last few minutes, Kay, we're talking to Kay Brandt. You've written how many books?
21.
21 books. What are your books? Are they mostly fiction or all fiction? Or?
Yeah, they're all erotica, except for one right now. I have a non-erotic horror book called Souls, S-O-L-E-S, which was actually a screenplay that I wrote in mainstream, and I could not get it to go anywhere. And so I wrote it into a book. And when I wrote it into a book, I realized there was so much more story.
Right.
So that was cool.
Awesome.
And now I'm going to turn it back into, I'm going to adapt my own novel and turn it back into a screenplay and then hand it over to some connections that I still have in mainstream.
Wow. So how did you get involved in writing and everything? I mean, obviously you have to love to write, really.
Always been a writer since I was a kid.
Wow.
Was always writing books.
That's the main component I've been hearing the whole time, your theme. It's like you've always been a creative writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just found where you can actually do something.
Right. But here's the curse and all that, is that you're told your whole life, follow your dreams.
Yeah, I know. Me
follow
too.
Follow your passions.
Too.
Do all that,
me
right?
Me too.
I followed mine completely to a T without wavering. And really, where did I get to?
Right.
In my 40s now, you know, like, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
so quickly tell me, what is an erotic novel? What do you actually do? You still tell a traditional story, but what is it? Do you get into the details a lot? Or is the whole story just about
They're fully
sex?
Explicit books.
Right.
Not every erotic book is fully explicit. Mine are.
Okay.
But I started because I adapted. I won some awards for a couple of movies I made in 20. I made them in 2010, but they came out in 2011 and won awards in 2012, AVN and XBiz, called the Cherry Movies, which are the two biggest budget all women movies ever made in porn.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not just about the budget. It's the fact that the size and scope of the projects, the stories, the act. I hired a mainstream actress who came in audition, and she played the main role of Cherry. It's a non-sex role. and because I wanted a thespian lesbian
to do the role.
Whoa. And nobody had ever done anything like that before. So when those movies, when I wasn't able to make any more, I really had so much more story to say that I decided to make them into books. So I wrote a series called The World of Cherry, and there's 5 of them out now. And they've been pretty successful. The first one is still my most successful one. And then I just sort of went on that theme.
Wow.
Hot
Wives and Their Dirty Desires. I mean, how can you not want a
I'm
book
telling
like
you.
That?
It's my latest release.
My Mommy's Got Your Daughter?
Yeah, those are my best sellers. I don't even have to advertise those. They sell all by themselves.
And what's the name of the newest release?
Hot Wives and Their Dirty Desires.
Oh, that's the name? That's so cute.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean,
so
I'm getting horny just looking at it. And thinking about My Mommy's Got Your Daughter.
Yeah, those are lesbian shorts. It's a series of 5 shorts that I wrote, loosely based on a series I made for Girlfriends Films called The Mother-Daughter Exchange Club.
Yeah, and Girlfriends Film, they make all lesbian movies, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I know quite a bit about the adult industry because I started an adult-oriented radio station a couple of years ago here. It never went anywhere. Oh. But at that point, and I'm still getting the trades, like XBiz and all that, that they send you for free. So I know what's going on in the...
It's too bad because I would love to do something like that, you know, to adult-oriented radio station.
I know.
Spice fell apart, but that was political. That was
One fell apart. I'll tell you why. Because I couldn't count on the girls to be here.
Yeah.
They would be late. They wouldn't show up.
He said they were
up.
All flakes.
Well, look what happened at Mofo's show. We were supposed to have a porn star in
right.
there, and she didn't
show
up.
Yeah, that's another video show here, right?
Yeah.
And they do that all the time. And I thought, I can't have a station like that. And I clearly wrote that on the website by being a little diplomatic about it. But I said, you know, I don't think I can work in this industry with this kind of work ethic, you know. And that's it, you know. So I closed it down. And that's that. But what I'm saying is that so I still get the trades. I know what's going on in the industry. And somehow I have always hovered around it because somehow by chance, because look, I used to be a graphic designer. Back from Vegas in the 90s, I moved back here. I worked for Digital Playground. They weren't even making movies. It was interactive.
I knew them then too. I was friends with Ali Jundavudian
and
the blonde, Scott Taylor, who was his partner back then.
Right, exactly. And then he married the blonde that was working
Samantha,
right.
She was the sales agent there. And then she actually broke up the partnership between Ali and Scott Taylor.
That's what I heard. But at any rate, so I was doing graphic design and animation for a porn company. So I saw a lot of porn there. Then I moved in the mid-90s. I moved to South Africa for a year. I came back. I became a web designer hired by an adult company that started making adult websites.
Yeah.
So somehow it always came my way. So I've been around it, but I could never be in it because... Like you said, you make a conscious decision. I can never go in that. It's a one-way door. Once you walk out, you can't come back in. As a normal.
You have to find other ways
life,
to do
right?
it. You can't use the same name that you're using in adult.
Right. But get rid of your reputation, which today is hard to do.
Yeah.
But listen, guys, we're totally out of time. We're going over time. Kay Brandt, an amazing guest. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Happy
to be here.
Thanks for suggesting, for coming on my show.
Sure.
It was amazing. Where can people find you? Where can they get your books, everything? What's going on?
No, you can type in Kay Brandt, KAYBRAND. On Amazon, and you'll find all 21 of my books. Most of them are only 99 cents. So what is stopping you from downloading
exactly
those?
There you
yeah,
go
come on
and masturbate to some erotica and literature.
I only
for some
make
reason.
35 cents on each 99 cent download, so just do
so
it
so it's
just
not about the money
it.
Man it's not about the money, just do it,
yeah,
man.
Just do it. It's good reading. It'll keep you occupied for a while. They're fun. They're entertaining. You can find me on Twitter at Jewelbox Films, which was my company Digital Playground. It's JEWELBOXFILMS. And Facebook,
all right, thanks everybody, see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.